Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and I thank you for joining us. I'm particularly excited this week because I'm joined in the studio by two of my favorite podcast contributors. That's right. It's James Scowcroft and Matthew Sine. No! It's Julian Lawrence and Allison Rudd. I really like the other guys, too. I like everybody equally. I like to think that they're all my children. Later on, we delve into the championship. Yes, a rare foray down under because Allison was actually in Cardiff on Friday night, where there was a football match between the teams of Cardiff City and Wolverhampton Wanderers. But let's get real. There's really only one place to start, and that's in Manchester. Allison, the cover of the game insert on Monday, I think, is really, really, really cool. It's like Pep Guardiola in triplicate, incidentally wearing this kind of gray long sleeve top that actually makes him look more buff than he really is. And he's just kind of screaming in agony. And beneath that, it says what's happening. It's got this blue theme. It kind of encapsulates it really, really well. I have to ask, what is happening? Because I actually went back and I looked at this. Oli Kay writes about this today as well, right? Pep Guardiola has conceded 3 goals in under 20 minutes, an inordinate number of times in his managerial career. It happened when he was at Bayern against Real Madrid, happened when he was at Bayern against Barcelona, it happened against freaking Leicester last year, it obviously happened, as you know well, in just 9 minutes against Liverpool, it happened again against Liverpool last week, and then it happens against Manchester United. I know there's other teams that have conceded 3 goals in a very short period of time, but this isn't supposed to happen. Any theories? Any ideas?
Well, Oliver Kay makes the analogy with boxing that if you are a highly tuned boxer who just wins and wins and wins and often wins on points and is regarded as elegant, perhaps, if he gets floored by a punch that he wasn't expecting, and because he doesn't get floored very often, maybe that just rocks the team so much they're dizzy for a bit.
He mentions one of the greatest boxers of all time, Joe Louis, is wonderfully pithy quote where he says, everybody has a plan until they get hit. And I think we need to give credit to Ollie and especially to the legendary Joe Louis.
If you strive for perfection, and we know that Pep is a perfectionist and everything is planned out, you know how you respond to the opposition having possession, you know how you respond to the opposition having a foray forward, and it cracks. If something perfect cracks, the crack will be deeper and sharper and perhaps shatter. That seems to me what Oli Kay's theory is to why this is happening, why those stats you just eloquently outlined about those spurts of, if they concede, they're quite likely to concede quite a lot in a short space of time, which does imply a shattering of confidence, positioning, the adherence to a plan. I mean, if you're a perfectionist manager, you have to make sure your players buy into what you believe in and they have to concentrate. City are lots of things this season, but what is impressive about them is how they do concentrate and they keep it going. If you know, it's like if you're driving and you see something, you know, you see something out the window and you stop, you just stop concentrating, bad things will happen. You sort of feel maybe he doesn't prepare them for those bad moments.
I'm trying to extrapolate your argument then. Is the implication that other teams can perhaps get away with being less concentrated than City. And City are either need to be fully concentrated or otherwise really bad things happen.
No, not really. I mean, I think other teams are more used to things going wrong. Other teams don't require perfection. Other teams have in their game plan, you know, managers will say, if we go a goal down, we'll do this. City don't. City want to set the agenda and be them. They don't really buy into plan B, C and D if things go horribly wrong. So they're left looking stranded.
Okay, but Julian, they're 2-0 up. And they're used to being 2-0 up. And then they concede a goal. No biggie, it's happened before. You're still 2-1 up. I mean, surely that's not catastrophic, conceding a goal at 2-1 up. It's perhaps what happens next, right? Or, I mean, yeah, what do you make of the K. Rudd theory?
No, I think it's a team, because Pep is such a control freak and everything is so detailed, they're players that don't know what to do when they're on the back foot. When you're on the front foot and when you have the ball and you know exactly what to do, so when your left back does this, you do this, and when Aguero comes in, you do this, etc. Like Alisson said, a lot of things is planned. When it's not in the plan, I think a lot of them are not really sure what to do anymore. That doesn't excuse why you don't track a run from Pogba or why you know your marking is loose on the Smalling goal. I give you that. But I do think, and you see, they got 6 yellow cards after the hour on Saturday. They lost their mind completely. They made some silly foul. I mean, Gabriel Jesus, you have some silly foul. How do you lose your head like that? And after the Liverpool game, Pep said, oh, we lost control for 10 minutes. And I think it was Kompany on Saturday said, oh yeah, we lost control for 10 minutes. It's really hard to have control in a football match for the whole 90 minutes. You know, any team, especially on big matches, when it's a big team against a smaller team and the big team just dominate from start to finish.
That's the crux of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you come out after a defeat and say, oh, it was just about 10 minutes, that's sort of not normal. Everyone has at least 10 minutes where they're not on top of it.
5 minutes sometimes. Everyone else. You'll be on the back foot, yeah. But losing control for 10 minutes doesn't mean every time you have to concede 3 goals.
I mean, I personally think the second goal, I just thought it was exceptional. And if you look, when the ball comes in from Alexis Sanchez, it's actually behind. It's not a perfect ball from Alexis. I mean, maybe, you know, it's a difficult skill and everything. But if you see, Pogba has to sort of crane his giraffe neck backwards to be able to steer the ball past the keeper. And obviously, you can always defend better, but you know he's coming. You can see him coming. That's what kind of gets me. And with the Herrera one as well. Okay, so maybe you don't think he's going to chest it me because it's Herrera. You think he's just going to shank it somewhere. But you know,
this one is more obvious even, I think, the run of Pogba on the first goal. Because he comes from so deep with the air. You know, I agree with you. Maybe the Herrera sort of chest pass is a bit more surprising than the Alexis cross. Because when you look at Alexis, you know Alexis is going to cross the ball that way. But I can't believe no one picks up. I mean, Gundogan on the first goal. I don't know. I guess maybe Otamendi should do better on the second goal. It's unbelievable to make mistakes at that level like this. But you didn't ask
why did each individual goal happen and what mistakes were made. You asked why did so many get conceded in a short space of time.
I guess you're right.
They're two separate things.
So is the implication that they concede a goal, things aren't quite perfect, they lose their sense of control, and so as a result, players are more prone to individual errors? I mean, is that the Rudd theorem?
Well, yeah. If you lose control, you're making mistakes because you're not in control.
Okay, let me put my blue-tinted lenses on. Gundogan should have made it 3-0 at the start of the second half. And Ashley Young should have been sent off, possibly sent to prison. and it should have been a penalty for Aguero, yeah? Which, qualified referee, do you want to tell us what Atkinson saw?
He saw the ball being taken. He didn't see the foul on the player.
How can you see one and not the other? I mean, it's not like you had hit a weird angle or anything. I can understand if he hadn't seen it. If he sees the ball being taken, he also
Or he's told in his earpiece by the assistant the ball was taken, and nobody really saw the violence of the challenge, because the ball was taken.
It was a bad mistake, yeah.
It was a mistake, yeah.
It was a serious, serious. You count the Gundogan one as a goal, and you count this as a goal, and it's 4-3, and City are champions, and we're not having this conversation, right?
Spooky parallel universe time.
I know. I want to talk United a minute. I thought they were really poor in that first half. I mean, really bad. Was it them being bad or was it City being good?
Both. I mean, City were excellent in the first half. There's a nice exclusive from Paul Hurst in the paper. There was no tactical analysis at half time.
It was very little.
It was all about we've got some great players. Go out and bloom and show how good you are. Yeah. And that actually was the key, because it's the first time I've seen Sanchez play beautifully for Manchester United. I mean, he played really well, I thought.
Definitely.
And it's one of the first times I've seen Pogba's lack of inhibition, if you like, because he's happy to pop up wherever he feels like it. It worked. That sort of freedom of expression, that aggression. The big players who are supposed to be great because they were so expensive and they came with a reputation, they actually woke themselves up.
Well, but isn't that maybe the lesson, that if you've got 2, 3, 4 truly world-class players, and again, I'd include David De Gea in there because he made a couple saves an average goalkeeper would not have made, that at any time you're capable of scoring a goal or of coming close.
They came back from behind at Palace. They came back from behind against Chelsea. And that's another, you know, it's another big game. I think it's 6 wins in a row now, 5 wins in a row in the league. And I think they're showing a lot of character that maybe we didn't think they really had in them.
There's a little backstory to this, which I think we probably need to... We need to address, at least, because it happened in the build-up of the game. I think it's an open secret that Pep and Mino Raiola are not huge fans, and it probably dates back to Ibrahimovic. I think when Ibrahimovic was at Barcelona, I remember Mino saying that, you know, Pep needed a psychiatrist or something? And did Mino say something to prompt Pep's reaction on Friday?
He said it was a dog.
Woof, woof.
Yeah, it was a dog.
But what?
The context was, well, again, it's, you know, go back to all the Ibra Barcelona thing, and I can't remember the exact quote, but yeah, he called him a dog.
Right. And Pep's reaction was to say, "Oh, but Mino came and offered me Pogba Mkhitaryan," to which I think Mino said, "Well, I never talked to Pep," but he didn't. He was careful to say, "I never talked to Pep," but it doesn't mean like I didn't talk to Beghidi Stein or Marwood or any of the other people who populate City. And then at the final whistle, of course, we see, you know, Pogba and Pep embracing and, you know, having a few words. Is this just all like kind of WWE background noise? Or
I thought, when I heard it, I thought, oh, Pep is good on there. You know, it's like he's sort of mind games. He never does mind game usually. It's more Mourinho type of kind of thing. And I thought, you know, good on him if he puts the mess in there by saying like, oh, yeah, look what happened. They tried to offload Pogba to us and Mino, blah, blah, blah. I'm not sure it's true, I have to say. I'm not really sure.
You think Pep is Pinocchio?
I think Pep was playing some sort of mind games there.
It hasn't been denied, though.
I think Pogba was what?
Pogba
quite
said
strong,
what?
Yeah, quite a strong tweeted response, what? Maybe on Twitter. But I mean,
you're right, agents will often explore,
let's be
possibilities.
Fair. Yeah, Mino Raiola wouldn't be doing his job if he didn't. I mean, look, with Mkhitaryan, you had a situation where the guy needed a home. He's a skillful attacking player, technically good. He'd be a fit at City. I might not get into starting lineup, but he'd be a fit. Pogba, I think, would definitely be a sit at Manchester City. They can afford his wages.
The fallout between him and Mourinho is after... You know, he's after the transfer window. I find it weird that they tried to make him leave the club. That Mino said, like, okay, he has to go now. Let's offer him to... And then he called City, he called Real Madrid, he called PSG and said, do you want Pogba? We can make it happen. I would find that really hard to believe. But maybe. But the whole situation between, it's either Pogba or Mourinho that we had at, you know, in February and March, because there were a lot of tensions between them, came out after... The transfer window.
Let's not but let's the be agent more too much credit though. Making a phone call to the richest club in England to say, do you fancy a very expensive player and will you spend a lot of money and give me a big cut, isn't clever. It's just
doing a job.
Doing a very simple job.
Equally though, if it's true, and I think we all find it plausible, do we give Pep some credit or City some credit? Because City are, you know, like, I don't want to have a go at them, but every football club leaks things when they need to, when it's appropriate. Wouldn't it have been really funny if they had leak that in January. I mean, if you really wanted to go and mess with United and mess with their heads, right? That's what you do in January. Say like, hey, look, we've been offered Mkhitaryan too. It's not just Arsenal. And look, they want to give us Pogba as well. Ha, ha, ha. We don't want your rejects, United. I mean, wouldn't that have been the kind of mystery? I mean,
they were maybe too busy to leak stories about Alexis and how Alexis
was making £1 billion a week.
And yeah, they preferred
leaking.
All the
they
money.
They were leaking. They were busy leaking other things.
You can't leak too many things either in the same like the same month or a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that wouldn't be classy.
To what degree do we think events at Anfield impacted City in this game?
Well, I don't really.
Hey, this wasn't City. I'm not making excuses for him, but this wasn't City's best lineup, right? Yeah.
No, exactly. And in that sense, in the sense that they're not in the driving seat for the second leg of the Champions League game, you do have to plan ahead to a degree and think, well, I'll rest him, and let's think about how difficult it's going to be midweek. I mean, I've been asking people involved in football and fans, how many City fans do you think would prioritise winning the title against Manchester United over winning through to the semi-final of the Champions League? And only sort of like really weird Man United haters would have said this game was more important. So
I've got people like that on Twitter who like I suggested, and I've got City fans who I know it's all right, but who are like, well, I don't care. But you know who I remember. Was it 3 years ago that Pellegrini, when they had a chance to go to the semi-final, or maybe they did go to, sorry. So he rested a bunch of players in the league. They drew, it was against Real Madrid, I think, the next game they were knocked out. But And people were just like, oh no, because I don't care. And I said, well, you know, surely Pellegrini's justified. He wants to give himself the best possible chance to win the Champions League. And they're like, no, he's a loser. The UEFA are all corrupt because we don't care about that. We just want to win the Premier League. And I'm like, already won the Premier League twice. You know, how about expanding your horizon? But surely, from Pep's perspective, given that he's only ever won the Champions League with Lionel Messi, I mean, he might.
And his big boss wants the Champions League.
And you're going to win the league anyway. Okay, it would have been nice to be on Saturday, blah, you know, all that narrative, the derby, etc. But you're going to win it next week or the week after anyway. It's not like if it's in jeopardy that, you know, you had to win the game, otherwise you might not have been sure to win it.
How stupid would he look if he'd played completely? Full because derbies are, you know, they often end up being really quite violent or feisty at least, and things happen. He would look such an idiot if he'd risk playing some crucial players.
I agree.
Or just tiring them out.
And same for Klopp. Klopp did exactly the same. There was no way he's going to put his first team against Everton on Saturday either. And even more for him, after, you know, being 3-0 lead, having a 3-0 lead going into next week's game.
All right. I don't like predictions, so I'm just going to ask for a percentage chance that City can overturn a 3-0. I mean, it's happened before that people have, it's happened before, never a 4-0, I think, but we've seen 3-0s being overturned, usually against Italian clubs, funnily enough.
We've seen a 4-0, obviously, very recently. I'm glad you love me enough remind me. Thank you.
That's right.
Thank you.
That's the only time it's happened, right? Yeah.
But let's not go over. We've all forgotten about it.
Do you want to put a percentage chance on this, Julian?
15%. 15.
Alison?
I'm going to go 20. I'm worried. It's probably good I'm worried. I hope Klopp's worried.
I was really worried after the PSG 4-0 against Barcelona. I promise you, I was really worried to the point that I didn't watch that second leg.
See, it's funny. I mean, I'm assuming we all assume that Klopp's going to go and play, you know, his Klopp-style football. But if I were in Klopp's position, and I would probably be wrong doing this, I would say, all right, screw this. Lovren, Van Dijk, all of you guys on the pitch. Klein, you're playing on the wing. Sean, Henderson. And we're just going to boot the ball to
Salah and Mane.
Yeah, no, I would play the 7-0-3.
Make it the most
formation.
Ugly, make it the ugliest game in your career. You don't care.
We'd be wrong. We'd be wrong because analytics tell us it's wrong, and Klopp wouldn't go against it, and whatever. But would you do that? Wouldn't you be like, just counting down like,
no space, nothing. You just like
just put
so
everybody back. If there's bodies there, you can score 1-2.
No, Liverpool have in their history lost games by doing that. They don't do that anymore.
When's that happened?
Well, when they lost the title to Arsenal, I think you'll find that's what happened.
Yeah?
89.
It's a different context, though.
Michael Thomas.
Not really. Liverpool did not, in that match, because Liverpool knew they had it sealed if they didn't concede two. They stopped playing football. It was a very bizarre game. They did not play the Liverpool way. They just stood around trying to just put a lot of bodies in front of the goal. It's there in the fabric of the club. You don't change your style because you think mathematically you've got it sewn up.
Now, this season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every single game in the Premier League, the Champions League, the Europa League, and what's left of the FA Cup. It's just £8 for an 8-week trial. But wait, if you act now, or even if you don't, even if you act later, you don't just get the videos of the goals. You also get the excellent content from the likes of George Culkin, Henry Winter, Matthew Syed, Jonathan Northcroft, Alison Rudd, and a host of other talented writers. Alison, what was your favourite goal of the weekend in the Premier League? And I know it's not from the Merseyside derby because there were no goals in that game.
Well, you've kind of spoiled it for me because you described so beautifully Alexis Sanchez ball through to Paul Pogba. So I won't repeat what you said, except I did love the way Paul Pogba jumped. He looked like he was an acrobat in the circus. You could perhaps argue it was inelegant, the way his limbs were flailing, but I liked the way he used every part of his body to make sure he reached, as you said, wasn't quite the perfect ball, it was a very good ball, to make sure he beat the keeper. It was aesthetically beautiful, and it was surprising because I've become rather bored waiting for Pogba to shine. So it was a very classy goal and aesthetically lovely.
Julien?
I went for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's goal yesterday against Southampton. Ooh, for Arsenal.
You like the unusual finish, the little stab.
I like the movement. I like the Aubameyang, Iwobi, Welbeck, Aubameyang combination. I mean, there were three against seven, eight, if you count McCarthy, the Southampton goalkeeper. Three against eight, and still managed to find space where there was no space, and to score that goal I thought was superb. The flick from Welbeck, I mean, like, I never saw Danny Welbeck doing anything like that before, so I was pleased for him and for Arsenal. But that was a very good goal in what was very, very disappointing first 28 minutes for them.
Well, we'll be talking more about that Arsenal-Southampton match right now, actually. We don't need to talk about it for very long. But I think it's worth noting that a lot of us have been critical of Arsenal for a while, and that they're still creeping up. I won't get into what the problem is, whether Wenger should resign and so on, because I think we've kind of been there and done that. But what I thought was interesting about this game, obviously he's looking ahead to the Europa League. He made a bunch of changes. We got to see this Reece Nelson guy. But it almost kind of blew up in his face, didn't it, Julian?
Yeah. I didn't think they played well at all, I have to say. I thought it was really that's what they do. They pass the ball sideways for a long time. There's no movement off the ball. There's not enough intensity. When everybody's playing with a lot of intensity, they don't do so much. And yeah, okay, the win is similar to the Stoke game in a way. I don't know. I know it was a B team and there was a lot of, you know, key players missing. But I thought Shkodran Mustafi, I mean, I don't know. I can name you 150 defenders who would have defended better than him in that game. And yeah, okay, they grind the win out, and in the end it was good because it's three big points, but yeah, it's far from, you can't be satisfied by, I think, a performance like this.
Are they going to catch Chelsea? Do we care? Does it matter?
I think it matters, yeah, if you finish fifth, which is the same as last year. It looks like you haven't regressed so much, I guess. If you finish sixth, it's another step down, I guess. I'm not sure it matters.
I want to ask about Welbeck, because I am kind of a Welbeck fan, and I thought, like, oh, he just should be celebrated, and then scores two goals, maybe gets a little bit of respect. But then one of the goals is a deflection, and he fouls a defender for the other goal, I thought quite obviously. What's up with this guy? Is he kind of done at this level?
Ooh, that's a big question.
No, I'm wondering. I mean, if you presume, well, we don't know what's going to happen next year, and it's Arsenal, so you never know. But
it's a big
they
question.
Have two center forwards, right? They've got a whole host of attacking midfielders. Ozil signed a new deal. Iwobi's going to come through. If you were Welbeck, should you say, like, you know what? Why don't I go to Bournemouth and replace Jermaine Defoe and or whatever? You know, should you be thinking in those terms?
Well, he's done if Wenger isn't there next season. Wenger adores him, absolutely adores him.
Is that why he plays him so much?
When he doesn't play him, it's usually because there's a fitness issue, or he's coming back from a fitness issue, or he's been injured, or he's protecting him because he doesn't feel he's quite ready. But he does adore him and is prepared to give him time to keep improving. And he has enough spurts of looking like a pretty decent striker who contributes to the team. He's not just a target man. He can be quite creative.
He was also pretty instrumental in Aubameyang's goal as well.
Yeah, he's creative. And
in fact, I thought that was a better contribution than the two goals he did score.
That's fair enough. But and also, it's an interesting question because he may or may not go to the World Cup with England. We don't know yet. It's a possibility. If he was to play between now and May, he might and play okay. He might be considered an option. And then if you get to the World Cup and you have a decent World Cup, or one that, where you are not embarrassed and you play a few minutes and look good, then if Wenger isn't there, then I think teams would be interested in him. I think there might be another chapter in his career. But it is a career where I just don't think he's ever had a long enough spell in the team to really tell us what he is, I don't think. I don't know, Julian, you've probably seen more of him than me, but I think there's more there. He's not finished.
I think if he's fit.
I think the fitness has been an issue. He's only 27, you know, and Wenger always says that a striker comes good between 27 and 32. That's where they are at their peak. But I think injuries have been a big problem. I think he hasn't scored.
Yeah, Wayne Rooney's 32, so that's.
He hasn't scored. He hasn't scored in the 17 Premier League games before yesterday. So I think the consistency is always going to be a problem. I know his ratio goals per minute played is not bad this year, but he also missed a sitter. And you think, how can you be so good on the Aubameyang goal with that flick, which is a great flick, and then miss that sitter, and, you know, and score two goals? And just, and I think we saw him against Milan in Italy, where he was very good, I thought, and yet still missed some very easy things. So I don't know if it's a concentration issue or if that could come a bit later, if he matured in his game a bit more. But yeah, at times he almost looked like he was playing as a second striker with Aubameyang, and maybe that's better for him than either playing wide or playing on his own up front.
It's about the battle of the jacks. I don't want to dwell on this, but Wilshere and Stevens, I mean, people didn't see this. Stevens, like, who is about twice Jack Wilshere's size, right? He's got Wilshere, who's basically water skiing off his back, holding onto his shirt. He turns and brushes him away, and he gets sent off. Now, Mark Hughes thought it was harsh. I'm not going to disagree with Sparky. What I don't get, too, though, is Stevens' shirt, which I'm assuming, I know that Southampton's shirts look slightly cheapo, but I'm sure it's not made of paper. I don't get it. You're a referee. What, will you think Stevens ripped his own shirt? And what?
No, the referee knew what Wilshere had done. That's why he booked him.
Well, why don't you send him off?
Why are you sending Steve?
Why? You're being an absolute ass. You're doing it again and again.
You can't send someone off for putting a shirt. It's, even if you put
why
it
do you
the
send
way
Stevens off then?
Because he like raised his hand in Jack's face and barged into him.
Stevens. How else are you going to get this guy off you? I don't. I mean,
this,
you know,
I think it's the most annoying foul. The most annoying foul for everybody who's played football is that kind of shirt pulling when you're
so
going away with the ball.
Don't
react. Since when? That's part of your job not to react, even if it's the most cynical foul.
I guess you're right. It just kind of annoyed me.
It's annoying, but you can't send him off. You can't send Wilshere off, but you have to send Stevens off for the reaction.
It's prejudicial against tall players, to be honest. Because the only way Stevens can retaliate is to sort of lean into Wilshere, and the only part of his body that's there is his head because he's so much shorter than him. Wilshere couldn't be sent off for a similar foul because he wouldn't have been able to reach the man's head.
Are Southampton doomed?
I think most people close to Southampton would have said really disappointing to get nothing out of the game, but they would have liked the spirit and the attitude, and there were spells where they were completely dominating Arsenal and playing quite nice football. You've got to come away from that. If you've got anything about you as Mark Hughes as a manager, you've got to come away with that and make that the launch pad for a spurt of points gathering that stops you getting relegated.
Yeah, I think they're going to stay up.
They play Chelsea on Saturday.
And then they play them again in the FA Cup.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is, Mark Hughes won 20 points out of 66 with Stoke, got fired by Stoke because he was not good enough. He, that was not working. I find it weird that he gets a job like this in a similar situation, a similar context, and you think, well, didn't work before, but that's going to work for us. And I hope it does, because I like Southampton, I like people working at the club. I like Mark Hughes. I've got nothing against Mark Hughes. I just find it a bit weird that you appoint a manager with no momentum whatsoever, who's been pretty terrible in his previous job, the same season, not even this, the same season, in a team that has no momentum, lost all confidence, and you think, yeah, that's going to work.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Love the game? Then don't miss The Game Daily. It's your lunchtime update from football's finest writers, and it's only at thetimes.co.uk. We don't often talk about the championship on this, and I want to make this very clear. I've said this before. It's because I don't follow the championship. Most of our guests don't follow the championship, certainly not to the same degree that we follow the Premier League. It's got nothing to do with snobbery, but it has to do with one of my pet peeves that a lot of times, and I think it's very obvious, you get ex-pros and journalists who don't follow the championship and then opine on the championship, usually by looking at the table and like, oh, Millwall are doing really well, ha ha ha, imagine them in the Premier League, and other such insightful comments. And by the way, I mentioned Millwall because there's a very good piece by Gregor Robertson today in The Game which talks about how Millwall could be coming up. However, this week we will make an exception because on Friday night, Cardiff played Wolves, who, as I understand it, were first and second in the championship at the time. And Alison Rudd was there, and she got to hear this.
Gary Medine against John Ruddy. Can Ruddy make himself a hero? It's Medine to step up, right-footed. Medine strikes in. Ruddy saves! John Ruddy saves! John Ruddy saves! He is the Wolves' hero! It comes back out to Goodison. Cavallero goes in. Referee's blurring. Oh, no, it's another penalty! Oh, can you believe it? 20 seconds to go! This is unbelievable! Here comes Hoylett to step up, right-footed, and he says, it's back on the bar! It's back on the bar! It's headed goalwards! It's wide! It's wide! It's wide! The game's over! The game's over! The game's over! Wolves have won it! Wolves have won it! Wolves have won it! A quite incredible finish to a remarkable match!
That was Mikey Burrows, who you heard from Wolves TV, who Julian just said off air, he's quite a cool guy.
He's a cool guy.
Close personal friends of Julian's, clearly. Alison, you were there. Pretty dramatic. Two penalty saves in the final 2 minutes.
Yeah, unbelievable. And then it got even more unbelievable with Neil Warnock saying very rude words
repeatedly
live on television. And you
what
had.
Did he say?
I can't say it.
F off. He basically told Nuno to F off. Like literally 1,000 times in 5 seconds.
And this is because Nuno didn't go and shake his hand after the game and instead went to...
Yeah, it's the celebration, I think, that got him. No, it was...
This is so heavy with irony, it's ridiculous. We've just heard the commentary. It was astonishing. I have never seen two penalties awarded deep into added time, both of them missed by the same team, both taken by different players. And the first penalty was a really good save by John Ruddy. So,
who's your cousin, by the way?
He's distantly related because of the extra Y. And then his manager, he said afterwards, he wasn't trying to be disrespectful to anybody. He was just so taken up with how exciting that is. Because this victory has more or less sealed Wolves' promotion to the Premier League. They could be promoted by the time most people listen to this podcast if results go their way. He just said, I wanted to run on and hug my goalkeeper. I was just so excited. And he's one of the more passionate, you don't watch the Championship much, Gab, but he's one of those passionate overseas managers who celebrates every goal.
I'm familiar with Nuno Espirito
Santo. Runs up and down.
Lucky for me, Alison, he's a foreign manager, so I've seen him before at Valencia.
Well, he's carried that on in the Championship. And his
goalkeeper as well.
His backroom staff always go crazy too. They're a sort of morass of celebration. And lots of opposition managers in the Championship have got cross with him and his backroom staff over the season because they do go a bit over the top. But in this instance, it's really hard to think why you wouldn't. So he runs on and they get very excited and they celebrate. And then he tries to shake Neil Warnock's hand and Neil Warnock will have none of it. And in his press conference afterwards, Neil Warnock made some very harsh criticisms of this counterpart at Wolves.
Oh, that's what they do maybe in their country, but not
country.
Not when you come here, not on our soil kind of thing.
Neil Warnock said that Nuno did not understand British manners. He had no education of how we behave after a game and he lacked class. So I was the one who drew the short straw and said to him, you've just been accused of not understanding British etiquette and having no class. And Nuno looked at me and he said, I have managed in the Champions League. I have managed in the Champions League. At which point I had to say, yeah, I get it. And then he said, no one can accuse me of lacking education.
Because
you've managed in the Champions League. In other words, Neil Warnock has not. So who is he? Who is he to tell me I lack class or etiquette?
He let himself down there. I mean, all right. Okay, look. I don't follow the Championship, but I don't find these two clubs particularly likable, or these two managers particularly likable. For those who don't know, Nuno Espirito Santo was Jorge Mendes' first client. Go ask Valencia fans about what they had to put up with when, thanks to Peter Lim, they became... Well, just do some Googling before I get myself in trouble. You've all read stories about what's happened at Wolves this year with the players who are in and why they're there and so on. On the other side, you have Vincent Tan and Neil Warnock, which kind of tells its own story. I don't know. I mean, I think Warnock's kind of a fool for making such a big deal out of it. Frankly, the guy didn't shake his hand. It's happened before. People didn't throw hissy fits when it didn't happen before, right? As I understand it, Nuno was willing to apologize.
He tried very hard to shake his hand later, and
yeah,
he wanted to apologize.
But then he's wrong to say, "Oh, look, I managed in the Champions League, so who are you?" I mean, come on.
But the point, but the underlying point is,
just say Warnock's a so and so, and leave it at that. I did my part. I tried to apologize. My intentions were good.
But the point is, there was so much at stake in that game, which is why the behavior from both sides was odd. Because now Cardiff are in this really strange position where they could end up having to go through the playoffs to get promoted when they looked odds on to be automatic. There's only 2 points between, as we speak, there's only 2 points between them and Fulham. And Fulham are on this incredible run. They are unbeaten this year.
I've got loads of time for Cardiff because Mrs. L is obviously from Cardiff. So we've got season ticket holders in the family. But I challenge any manager in a game like that, with an ending like that, not to go and celebrate with your player like Nuno did. And maybe it's a more continental thing for us, Gabs, and more, not so much in Britain. But, it was a crazy thing.
Yeah, there's a really stupid thing here, as I see it, from Warnock's side, is that it's not as if the guy didn't know or he's trying to disrespect Warnock. I mean, they might have had words during the game, because I presume Nuno has he's gone to shake other managers' hands this season before in other matches, right? So he didn't do it. He tried to do it later. He tried to apologize. why you gotta go and grandstand like this, Warnock?
Warnock is by far not the best behaved, most exemplary manager ever.
No, exactly. No, so Warnock's got a whole history there. You know, let's not bring up Jason Punchin. More Googling you can do. And, and as far as Nuno, to think, what, you're somehow better because you've managed in the Champions League? You owe your career to one man, Nuno. Okay, enough of this nonsense. How about some quick hits instead? Chelsea are held 1-1 at home by West Ham, and Antonio Conte comes out and says it's a pity and that they don't deserve Champions League football next season. Alison, I assume you'll tell me he's correct.
Well, it's less about deserving. He was more just fed up. He even used the bored word. I mean, it's really, really, your time is up when you start saying how bored you are. He's bored of the same old story. Teams above Chelsea are just more clinical, where Eden Hazard plays pretty football, but he refuses to shoot. I mean, it is slightly ridiculous that you can dominate large portions of a game and just not get the return on goals. So in that sense, they don't deserve it because they're just not converting. That's part of football. They're not converting their nice play into goals.
Yeah, you hear that, Eden Hazard? It's all your fault. Speaking of West Ham, it's Chicharito Hernandez who gets the equaliser. Julian, he's a poacher. He has 8 goals this season in 25 appearances. Should he be playing more?
I think so. I mean, his record against Chelsea, by the way, is pretty incredible. I think he's 5 in 6 sub appearances against them. 9-14,
whatever. No, but still, it's good. To it.
I think it's always the same if you play on his strength. He's amazing. If you don't, if you throw long balls or if you ask him to run in behind like, Usain Bolt space, he's not going to do that. But like you said, he's a poacher. So if you put the ball in the box,
he might score more.
Because I don't think when he plays, they play on his strength.
Rafa Benitez is now openly campaigning for Jonjo Shelvey to get into the England team after another great performance in Newcastle's win over Leicester. Now, Henry Winter, on the other hand, told us recently that it'll never happen because of some things about Jonjo Shelvey that I should Google. Alison, where do you stand? Do you stand with Henry or do you stand with Rafa?
Well, Henry's right. It's not going to happen. But it's not going to happen because Southgate will not have time with Jonjo in order to make sure he can get the best out of him and iron out the self-discipline issues that Jonjo Shelvey has. The fact that Rafa Benitez has stuck with Shelvey, when a lot of managers would just say, this is too big a headache, proves that it is doable. You can use him, because Benitez sort of let Mitrovic go to Fulham because of the self-discipline stuff. It is possible to do it. And also, England need, they especially if Lallana isn't going to be fit, they need someone who can distribute.
Christian Eriksen may or may not have scored 2 goals in Tottenham's win over Stoke on Saturday. But either way, he's in phenomenal form. Julian, who is more valuable to Spurs, him or Kane? And who should get credit for that goal, bearing in mind that Harry Kane wants to win the Golden Boot?
The goal should go to Eriksen, 100%.
Why?
Because there's not enough. If Harry Kane even touches it, brushes it with his shoulder, that doesn't change the direction of the ball. The ball was going in anyway. So it should be Eriksen's goal, right?
Yeah, but you still want to give it to Kane, because at least this way we can have a race for the Golden Boot.
Right. Maybe just for that, then Kane can have it. And then...
Come on, let's be nice.
I will pick Eriksen, though. And that might sound a bit controversial, because who provides the chance for Harry Kane to finish?
Yeah, but Harry Kane scores when Eriksen's not there too.
Yeah, but Eriksen does assists even when Kane is not there too.
It's remarkable.
Without Eriksen, Kane would have half the chances that he's had this season.
It is pretty remarkable how that we're even having this conversation about who's more valuable, Kane or Eriksen, and it's just a testament to what Eriksen's done.
Yeah.
But you think the dubious goals panel should take a moral stance on goals? Clearly, 100%. Yeah.
Jurgen Klopp understandably rang the changes, and the result was a very dull Merseyside derby. Alison, I assume you're okay with this because he's got bigger fish to fry.
Oh, much bigger fish. And in a sense, they won the Merseyside derby because it would have really, really riled Everton fans that Liverpool just didn't care. Just didn't care about this at all. Let's just get through it. It was an irritant of a match to be got through. And the fact that Everton could not take advantage of that will hurt more than if it had been a defeat to Liverpool playing a full-strength team.
Wayne Rooney was distinctly anonymous in the derby, and Paul Joyce reports in Monday's Times that he's on the verge of losing his starting spot. And Joyce, he mentioned some numbers, which we love. He hasn't scored in 2018, and despite playing central midfield, he managed to touch the ball just 29 times in 56 minutes. Julian, is it time to say goodnight?
Yeah, and I don't think... it's not sad.
The money here.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I'm not sure he's playing. He's being played in the right position for him at his age.
Is the right position for him at another, at a different club?
Yeah, I still think he can offer something, but I just think it's the way it goes at his age. It's the end of the cycle, and it's not sad or surprising. It's just the way it is, and you can't be surprised when, you know, he's not having the effect that you were thinking he could have had a few years ago, because that's not the case anymore. So it was always going to be at some point. You know, I know he had a good start of the season, but it's just the way it is.
I just don't want to see him in midfield anymore.
Gab, one for you. Three teams could have won the league this past weekend. Only one did. Tell us about them.
Well, Paris Saint-Germain didn't because they drew. Ha, ha, ha. And Monaco now have a 17-game unbeaten streak in the league. And of course, we know all about Manchester City. The one that did, surprise, surprise, were Bayern Munich. Who, it's their sixth Bundesliga title in a row. We've all spoken about the imbalance of power and blah, blah, blah. What I find absolutely remarkable is since Jupp Heynckes, who literally hadn't managed since 2013 and literally came out of retirement from walking his dog to go and manage them, he's just rotated everybody continuously. He's managed to keep everybody happy that way. I wonder if maybe they're a bit untested and have lost chemistry because they got good draws in the Champions League and some fortunate breaks as well. But the upshot of this is that Bayern are really, really well rested now too. And if they can come together in the Champions League in the semifinals, I wonder if the most improbable storyline, Heynckes winning another treble 4 years after he retired, might actually come to pass.
Hi there, and welcome to The Sweeper, which is the Times' fantasy football tip service. My name's Charlie Scott, and I'm joined, as ever, by Paddy Bombear.
Hello there.
And, yeah, a bit of a disappointing week on the whole, I would say, for fantasy Premier League players. Not many big scores, unless you have the likes of Paul Pogba, Christian Eriksen. They're the two main people who jumped out, would you say, and Danny Welbeck.
Yeah, Welbeck was a bit of a surprise. You'd expect Eriksen, given the way he played against Chelsea the previous weekend as well. It's obviously double game week time now, and seeing the likes of Eriksen and Pogba pop up with a couple of goals each was it's probably going to earn them a lot of transfers in this week, and rightly so. And the same goes really for Alexis Sanchez. I think he's looked very good for the past two games, finally finding some form for United. They've got two games this weekend. He is expensive, but it looks like he's probably going to be worth it.
Yeah, okay. And just touching on Welbeck, Arsenal are clearly prioritising the Europa League. Do you think he might start quite a few of their league games going forward?
It's probably likely. The problem is that there's just going to be rotation across the league for teams who don't have a huge amount to play for left in the Premier League. But at those sort of prices, it could be worth a punt.
One person who stood out for me and has done all season without me actually putting him in my team is Luka Milivojevic, the Crystal Palace central midfielder and captain. He's the only outfield player worth $5 million or less with more than 110 points this season. He's got 125, which is more than Mesut Ozil, Morata, Pogba and Lacazette. He's their top scorer and has 29 points in their past three game weeks. And, importantly, takes penalties, which, when you've got Wilfred Zaha and Andros Townsend in your team, then that's quite a big deal.
Absolutely. They're a team who don't have a double game week, Crystal Palace, but they do have some nice fixtures between now and the end of the season. And if you don't have a free hit for the blank game week coming up, then Milivojevic and Zaha, I think, are going to be pretty useful assets. The double, of course, is this week, and there's plenty of players who you're going to want to look for. Kane is probably one that stands out. Whether or not he'll play two games with possible rest coming up with an FA Cup semi-final, we're not sure. But, you know, Kane's always capable of popping up with four goals here and there, so he's going to be the most popular transfer, I suspect, this week.
Yeah, I guess I think rotation's a slight worry before those FA Cup semi-finals. You've got United playing Spurs, and they've both got this double game week. Chelsea, I mean, they've got Southampton, so they're probably less worried, but United and Spurs might rest players. But I've been really impressed by Dele Alli the past 5 or 6 weeks. His stats haven't really tallied up between how he's been playing and his FPL points, but he's exploded recently and has 37 points in his past 4 game weeks. And with 2 double game weeks for Spurs before the end of the season, then he's well worth consideration.
Well, for all our advice on the upcoming double game week and beyond, you can go to thetimes.co.uk/fantasyfootball and sign up for our free email. Or you can go to Facebook, search for The Sweeper, join the group and post your questions and we'll get back to you.
Right, that's all we've got time for today. Many, many thanks to my excellent guests today, Alison Rudd and, of course, Julian Lawrence. Remember, just £8 for an 8-week trial if you want to subscribe to our newspaper. Just search The Times online. This season, in addition to our wonderful content, you also get the Sunday Times content. And you can access highlights of every game in the Premier League, Champions League, Europa League, and FA Cup. I won't be back next Monday. I'll leave you in the very capable hands of Alison Rudd after what could be yet another City defeat. It's Spurs up against Manchester City at Wembley.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.